a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
I'll be here today. So that's Joni Mitchell bringing in my show. I'm Bernie Steffen, and this is Eco. Wait a minute. Lady, you can't come in here. I left the door open because I'm waiting for my guest.
What?
But
what?
I'm sorry, lady. Please, please go out. I don't know you.
Marie. My name's Marie. Cheryl sent me.
Marie? Did you say
Cheryl? Cheryl sent me.
Oh, Cheryl's not coming today?
Cheryl's coming. She's been delayed, and she asked me if I'd come in and talk to you for just a minute and to tell you that she is on her way, and she's very sorry, and she'll be here real soon.
Well, that's really a relief because, you know, I get stressed out easily, and I like the guests.
You look stressed, Bernie.
Well, I am, and I've never had a guest not show up. I haven't done a lot of shows, but that's one of the firsts for me right now.
Well, Cheryl's really sorry, and she just told me to get in my car and get over here real fast. I'm visiting her from out of town, and her neighbor has some parrots loose in her yard, and they're in her tree. So Cheryl's trying to get the parrot out of the tree, and she said she would be here in just a minute. They had a net when I left, so I bet you she's on her way already.
How many parrots?
Two parrots. One, a big old macaw, blue and yellow, and then another one, a red one. I don't know what kind that one is. I think it's just a parrot.
So did they take them outside?
And they took them outside. They let them outside. Then they flew across the street and into Cheryl's yard.
Oh, they weren't Cheryl's parrots.
No, Cheryl don't like parrots.
Oh, okay.
Well, she likes them in a zoo, but she wouldn't have them in a house. They scream.
Yeah.
They scream all the time. They're really annoying.
Well, I find them annoying when I say something bad and they repeat it.
That's very annoying, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's really sorry, and she's looking forward to this interview. And she just told me to come talk to you for just a minute.
Great. So we'll be talking about improv today. You must be doing improv as Cheryl's relative.
Oh, not so much. Cheryl's the performer in the family. You know, I mean, I have a job and stuff, and I communicate with people on the phone, you know. But when they call in, I'm kind of a customer service kind of person. But no, Cheryl's a performer. But she told me that we are always all improvising all the time, because anytime, like you and me right now, we're improvising because we don't know each other, and here we are talking, and I didn't know I was going to be here even like 15 minutes ago. I didn't even know, so I couldn't have been prepared.
So all the world is really a stage.
Absolutely.
Do you know who said that?
I do. That was William Shakespeare.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, I've been around.
Yeah. Well, I don't read much, but I heard of Shakespeare.
Well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so some of his famous lines I know, too.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you like to do? What's your hobby or interest?
I'm getting a little older now, so I do a lot of traveling. I have only a part-time job, so that means that with my Social Security, I can do some traveling. So I like to travel. I like the desert Southwest. I go there a lot.
Do you go by car or do you fly?
Oh, no, I go by car so I can drive, you know, and stop when I want to stop and you know, eat a burrito here and a taco there and a chalupa there, you know. I do like Southwestern food.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like driving, too.
Driving is
a... Yeah, airplanes, you're like taken from one spot and you're dropped in another, and it's sort of a... You know, it doesn't feel human scale. It's superhuman.
I'm as independent as a hog on ice. You know that phrase?
Maybe I have, but it's not in my vocabulary.
You know why hogs on ice are independent?
No, I don't.
I'll tell you. It's because hogs have those little pointy hooves on their feet, right?
Yeah.
And when they get on ice, they know that they can fall through because they're heavy and they got those pointy hooves. So what they want to do is spread out.
Ah.
So that means when you're trying to get a hog to move around on ice, they don't want to do what you told them to.
They're sliding around on their belly when that happens.
They're trying not to fall through the ice and drown.
I thought they were trying to get cool.
No. If they're on ice, it's an accident.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting.
You find out a lot of stuff.
So pigs are smart, aren't they?
Pigs are brilliant. Pigs are really smart.
How come they get such lousy PR?
Well, You remember there was a movie called Babe about a very smart pig.
Well, I've heard of the movie and the book Babe, but I haven't participated.
Yeah, pigs are very, very, very smart.
Yeah.
Yes, and they can be very dangerous. You don't want to mess with a sow, especially when she's got piglets. You don't want to mess with her at all.
But we treat them so badly.
We eat them.
Well, more than that, we like when there's a person we don't like, we call him a pig because he's dirty or because he's a cop or something.
Well, pigs do hang around in the mud all the time, and they eat like pigs. They do. Pigs, rah, 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 rah. Pigs are, you know, they don't have no manners.
So they deserve the disdain that we cast on them.
Well, it's not even disdainful. It's just accurate. You could say to someone, you eat like a bird. That means you eat into little tiny bites.
I know some people that eat like birds.
Yeah,
little sip here, yeah, little crumb there. Yeah. I'm a gobbler, and I eat at a decent pace.
Yeah.
How about you?
I eat pretty fast because I'm, well, and I kind of eat distractedly because I here's one thing Cheryl and I have in common. We both like to read while we eat. So even when I'm at her house and we're together, we're often sitting down for lunch or whatever, and we both got our book and we're reading and eating, and we don't even talk while we're eating because we like to read while we eat.
Wow. That is so... wait a minute. Wait. Oh, hi.
Cheryl!
Glad you made it.
Cheryl!
Whoa. I was really afraid.
Hey, everybody. I'm so sorry.
It's okay, Cheryl. I appreciate that you sent your cousin here, Marie, to let me know. That was a big relief.
Well, Marie is staying with me right now, and she could see I was really freaking out about not being here. And she when I asked her if she'd come, she told me yes. It was fun. Bernie's fun to talk to. I know he is. He's in my class. I know, too. You told me that already. Should I go now?
Yeah, Marie, if you don't mind, and could you close the door as you go out?
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, Bernie. Mwah. Bye.
Oh, Cheryl, thank you so much.
Oh, hey.
She speaks so highly of you.
Oh, yeah, we've been.
And I already think highly of you. That's why you're my guest. So
oh, thank
I think
you.
It's time to move on from the improv that we just did and let you be the real Cheryl, the live person
Instead
that is my guest today. So, you know, today, I'm Bernie Stephan, and this is Ecologic, and that's a surprise opening that we had. And Cheryl King, my special guest, she's my improv teacher on Monday nights, and the best one I've ever had. She's an actor, a director. She has a couple of classes. The one I go to is in Santa Rosa on Tuesday nights, and then you have one in Petaluma.
Petaluma on Monday nights at Keller Co-Workspace. That one's from 5 to 7 p.m., followed by a stand-up class. That's from 7 to 9.
Wow. I tried stand-up, and it was too hard.
Stand-up
I gave up.
Very
hard. Yeah. Well, it's great that you help teach that. Your business is called Stage Left Studio.
Correct.
Does the left have a particular meaning?
Yeah. Stage left, as you may recall, is a stage direction. There's stage right. When you're standing on the stage and you're looking at the audience, the direction to your right is called stage right. The direction to your left is called stage left.
Yes.
So it's a stage direction. It's also what Snagglepuss would say, exit, stage left. That was a cartoon when I was a kid. It's also my political orientation.
Okay. I'm left-handed, so I notice how the world is favoring right-handed.
Of course.
I wondered if sometimes the use of left gets used still in kind of a sinister way or negative way.
You know that sinister actually means left. It's the Italian word for left, sinister.
Ah.
Yeah, so left and sinister mean the same thing.
Okay, well, in our culture here, I think the sinister means something a little deeper than mere direction.
Simon Bar, what you call it? Yeah, it's we think of sinister as being devious. Yeah. Oh, but then there's the left-handed compliment, which means a compliment that wasn't direct but was indirect.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of that in our vocabulary, so
yes, there is.
I'm sensitive to that.
I bet you are.
Yeah. Are you left-handed?
No, I'm right-handed.
Well, that's fine. I think we can still get along.
And I'm often right. And sometimes I'm not.
Sometimes I leave. So we named this show Play, Presence, and Connection. And we chose that title purposefully, but let's break it down a bit. Let's talk about the play aspect. Play has power even for us adults. We understand that it helps children learn, but help talk a little bit about how play is important for us older folks.
Well, play is important for anybody, no matter how old you are, from the time you're born until the time you die, because play is a structure where you don't have a set goal. It is free. So that you have a freedom of choice. You have a freedom to yield to your impulses, which means that your impulses have value. Your intuition has value. So it's not structured time-wise, so there's not a hurry. You don't have a job to do. You're not working for a grade. So all of those pressures that we put on ourselves when it's goal-oriented, we don't apply to ourselves when it's play-oriented. So play leads you into your best self, your freest self, and that is the place where you're your most creative.
Well, I'd like to just throw in a comment here because we live backing up to a church, Methodist Church on Montgomery. You may know it here in Santa Rosa. And in the back, they run a daycare program during the week. And from 2 to 5 are the range of the kids there. And when they come out into the play yard, there's such a joy, I feel. Some people say, I don't want to be near a school. Well, you want to be near a preschool because these kids are running around, screaming, having fun. And that is infectious. I feel joy over the fence, through the fence, without seeing them, just hearing them in that mode, as you described, of not feeling constrained about what they could do next.
Absolutely. And even when they do scream, which I'm not fond of, they are screaming for the delight of exploring what it sounds like when they do that with their face and their throat. So they're experimenting, right? It's about their worldly curiosity.
Yeah.
And that is, it has a similar quality, I think, of a bunch of chirping birds in a forest. It gives me that kind of sense, and I bet it does you too.
Yeah, and I think it may also relate to when I was growing up, German parents, German household, children should be seen, not heard, was very prevalent. I remember when we had families over and the women would tend to congregate in the kitchen and the men would go smoke in the living room. And I always came over to the men and wanted to hear their stories, sat there. And every once in a while, I wanted to offer an opinion or a question. And of course, I didn't experience World War II like they had. I didn't experience any of that stuff. And they just shut me up. And I was still interested, but I was always told and expected to behave, and that meant being quiet.
When we were kids, Bernie, the attitude about children was that they had no rights.
Right.
So what you needed and what you wanted, other than them keeping you safe and teaching you some basic cultural and social skills, don't touch a hot stove, they didn't really care much about that. Your little psyche, your little creative self, they didn't care. My family didn't care either. They taught me things that I needed to know, how to be ethical, how to be moral, how to be honorable, how to behave in certain situations, not to get in danger. But yeah, taking care of my little creative self, nah, that wasn't a high priority.
I escaped from that when we came to California. I was age 16. We moved to Southern California, and I was introduced to a whole lot of stuff that was new.
I bet you were.
And my mind started having hallucinations. I started seeing things differently, tasting new foods, feeling better about myself, actually, and for the first time being social with my kids in my class. This I had never experienced before. So I made one of these shifts while I moved from Canada to Southern California. It may seem it's about weather, but it was a lot more that. It was coming of age for me.
Oh, hell yeah. It's a culture, right?
Yes.
California is a very specific culture. It's why I moved here from New York, because I wanted to find a progressive culture, and I wanted that beautiful weather. And Northern California turned out to be a perfect spot.
Yeah, so we have play within our improv as a fundamental in order to sort of expand our spontaneity capability.
Yep.
To be creative, to explore curiosity that in other conversation we might not ever explore.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell me more how this really benefits you as a everyday person with a lot of responsibilities, doing your job, having a family.
Oh, you mean me personally? Or
No. In general. You've seen a lot of students and you've seen a lot of people go through experiencing improv and learning from it.
Yeah, well, the kind of clinch you're talking about that your parents taught you and that they visited upon you and upon themselves, obviously, are what a lot of people do. A lot of us have been trained from the time we were in pre-K to try to get an A, to try to please the teacher, to try to please the authority figure. Once you become an adult, you're trying to please your boss, you're trying to please the government, you're trying to please someone other than yourself, which means that you lose awareness of what you want. And when you do that, you lose contact with your actual self, with your actual impulses, with your actual creative self and curious self. So for all people, improv and the kind of play that's involved in improv will put you in a place to where you can quit being driven by what you believe other people want and instead focus on your passions, your joy, what gives you pleasure, what gives you excitement, and that then leads to more authenticity.
Well, yeah, authenticity is a great word. I'm also a member of a Toastmasters group, and I've been with them, Toastmasters, for about 3 years now, learning how to speak more effectively. I want to be heard. I've been talking a lot for the last decade, but mostly I'm not heard. So I've been trying to figure out how to get to that place. And what I've been learning there is I need more authenticity, not what's coming out of my head, but what's coming out of my gut.
And you know how to get to what's in your gut is by listening. So the best way to be heard is to listen.
Yeah, you're jumping to the part where connection. I want to get to a step in between that. But first, what I'd like to do is invite callers. You know, this is a good conversation between Cheryl and I, but it would be even better if one of you listeners gave us a call. The number is 707-755-9250. Write that down this time if you didn't get it, okay? 707-755-9250. Now's a good time to call in while we listen to our underwriters.
Thanks North Coast Solar for their ongoing support. They've been supplying residential and commercial businesses with solar power since 1984. Their website, ncsr.com, contains information about how to improve energy reliability. They can be reached at 707-575-3999. North Coast Solar is proud to sponsor Uncle Charlie's Jukebox here on Cows every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific.
We thank Mac Daddy Repairs for their ongoing support. They are a West County computer and phone repair center featuring on-site and remote support. They're located at 301 North Main Street in Sebastopol and can be reached by email at support@macdaddyrepairs.com or by phone at 707-861-9403.
We're back. This is Bernie Steffen, Ecologic, and we're talking about play, presence, and connection today with Cheryl King. Cheryl, would you be willing to read a what do we call them here? A general service announcement?
Sure.
And would you be willing to do it in an improv fashion?
Yeah, as long as I got that skill.
Well, you got the skill for sure. And I think it would be nice for us to imagine that, read this public PSA. Service announcement like you're a gardener and you're in love with plants.
The Community Seed Exchange is an all-volunteer group of local gardeners and seed savers. They maintain a thriving seed garden and a community seed library located on the grounds of St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Sebastopol. The seed library provides Sonoma County gardeners with free, locally grown, open-pollinated, pesticide-free, and GMO-free seeds, mostly grown in the seed garden on site. To volunteer, visit communityseedexchange.org/contact.
I loved your enthusiasm. Thank you so much. Would you mind doing a current event as well? This time, read it like you're an older man, a proud father, grandfather.
One of California's longest running and most beloved music gatherings has returned. It's the 51st annual Father's Day Bluegrass Festival, taking place June 18 to 21 at the Nevada County Fairgrounds in Grass Valley. Spanning three stages and over 30 bands, including the Bluegrass Cardinals, the Sam Grissman Project, the Poe Ramblin' Boys, and many others. Tickets for this event can be obtained at fathersdayfestival.com. And guess what? KOWS is giving away a pair of tickets covering all 4 days of the event. We'll be drawing a name in the first week of June. Just call into a live show and give us your name and email address, and we'll add you to the drawing jar. Or, better yet, email your name and information to cows@sonic.net. That's KOWS@sonic.net.
Fantastic, Cheryl. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah. How did you first come into improv and decide to pursue it as a full-time career, I guess?
Well, I actually didn't ever improv until I had been in show business for nearly 20 years. But I had become, I had spent a stint as a mime and then as a stand-up comic, and then I had moved on to solo shows, and I had moved to New York City, and I had written my first solo show and started taking acting classes because I was a better writer than I was an actor at that point, because stand-up comedy and acting are two separate skills. So I needed to become an actor. In the course of that, working with my teacher, Carol Fox Prescott, I was introduced to some great improv teachers like Gary Austin of The Groundlings in Los Angeles and Michael Gelman of Second City. And that was when I first started doing improv, and that was in 1996. And I ended up becoming Gary Austin's assistant and worked with him for 10 years. And so I was in every improv class that he taught, and then I began teaching improv myself. So I've now been teaching improv for 27 years.
Fantastic. You were at the pinnacle in New York City, right?
I actually was. I got called by the New York Times the matriarch of the off-off-Broadway solo show scene. And indeed I was, because I had my own theater and people did their solo shows in my theater. And I also curated the solo show portion of the Estrogenius Festival and the Midtown International Theater Festival, plus three festivals that I created. So I've read hundreds, literally hundreds of solo shows and directed over 80 of them and written and performed two. So
fabulous. I love learning about your history.
It's checkered.
Yeah. And let me go back to something you said a minute ago about listening. You know, being present requires what?
Listening, for a start.
Yeah.
Being aware of your own self. So there are various kinds of listening, which you probably know, having practiced them, maybe not intentionally, but there's the kind of listening that is, I'm waiting until you quit talking so I can say my thing.
Yeah, like I did it right now.
And that is not actually listening, right? That's impatiently waiting your turn to talk.
That's listening for an opening.
That's exactly right, which is totally different from actually being present and allowing yourself to receive. Now, when you listen to receive, you not only receive the sense of what somebody is saying, but you receive their body language, you receive their intonation, you receive their breath, you receive what their eyes are doing, what their arms are doing, you feel their energy, and then you are truly with them, which means that any response that you give them is authentic and real and respectful. Because if you haven't actually listened to the person you're talking to, that's not respectful.
Well, you're correct. And I'm going to admit here that most of my life, I've been more anxious to talk than to listen, and especially in later in life. And I attribute to that lack of self-confidence. I want to project confidence, and I feel like I have to talk to establish that I'm a worthy person to be with this other person.
Ooh, well, you have fallen for a fallacy.
I know.
Yes, because the way you can think about the Dalai Lama, most people have confidence in the Dalai Lama. They believe in his authenticity. They believe in his true compassion. They believe in his spiritual presence. Why? Because he's not trying to convince anybody of anything. He is practicing his beliefs. When you practice your beliefs, that's different from trying to get somebody else to believe something.
Yeah, I you're so right. And I know how I have always put my voice in the mix when I'm with someone, having a group or one-on-one. I want to be heard, and I have to learn, and I have been learning to listen better. And the improv exercises force you to listen if you're going to want to be having something coherent come out of it.
That's right. And you recall one of the first exercises we did when you were first in my class was the exercise where you tell a very brief, like 1 minute story of just your regular old day, whatever it was, and then someone else tells that story back to you in your voice as though they were you. And the only way to effectively reproduce a story that someone has just told you is to fully listen. You can't be sitting there going, okay, I got to remember that detail. Okay, I want to do a good job. Okay, I want to sound as excited as she did. No, you can't do that. You have to be willing to just receive and then try to hand back your best guess at what you just received. So it's a reciprocal thing, right? So truly listening is a reciprocal process.
I found that very hard because there was so much I was trying to remember, not only the words, but also the gestures and the meaning and stuff. And
you
in the end, when
it
was my turn to, perform what I had heard, it was very hard to pull that together.
Indeed. And even that word you just used, perform, shows that you had missed the mark. Did you know that the word error is also connected to the word sin? And both of them mean missing the mark. So it's not that you did, or you or anybody in this situation did badly or did poorly or failed. It's that you missed the mark. So if I were an archer and I was shooting at a target and I kept missing the bullseye, I would just make a correction. I wouldn't decide I'm a bad archer. I would just make a correction. So what we have to do in improv is make the correction. And the correction is don't go for result. Go for the process. And this applies to all creative endeavor. It's about the process. The result is not in your hands. You can try to ensure the quality of the process and the quality of your presence while you're doing it.
Yeah, that's very good. It really is something I could have used a long, long time ago.
In your childhood, it would have been nice.
In my childhood, at school level, and university, and relationships all over the place. So mm-hmm.
Never too late.
No, I agree with that. And I have learned more in my last decade than I did in any previous decades about how to have conversation and relationship with people. And that improv is a big part, is one tool set that I use.
Exactly. Youth is wasted on the young, they say, and it's because as we get older, Bernie, we learn what we want to focus on.
Yeah. Well, you know, the part of to be present, you've got to listen and listen and listen. Obviously, you have to speak as well, but you want to be aware of what your response is signaling, because often it's misunderstood. Often, you know, you have a certain meaning and it's heard with another meaning, and we need to understand the subtleties of the meanings that some words have.
That's right. And of course, we all have separate realities. So my idea of what a word means is always going to be colored by my experience, and yours is going to be colored by your experience. So if I say someone was strict, I have a notion in my head of a strict person and how I felt about their strictness, and you do too. And what if your strict person was angry and punitive? Then your idea of strict is going to carry that weight, right? Whereas if my strict person was able to deprive me of opportunities, then I'm going to think of that when I think of the term strict. So strict, or any other word and any other situation, is going to be interpreted by the person who's having it. So that's, again, another reason to focus and listen and not make talking a point of anything, but keep talking as a means of communication. It's not, I want to say my word. I want you to listen to me now. I want to be important. That's all ego.
Right.
Get your ego out of your communication, and you're just you, but anybody, and you will do far better at communicating.
You remind me of an exercise we did last Tuesday, and that was using a sock puppet to kind of convey a second voice that's in our head. So it's like a thought bubble you would see on a cartoon.
That's right.
And it's for the audience to hear. It's not that person, what they say to the other person in a conflict situation, but sort of an aside, what they say to themselves. It's like self-talk, and it was really... I didn't do that part of the exercise. I just did the other side. But I really enjoyed how some people are able to be two characters.
Oh, yes. And Daniel, for instance, is extraordinary. He's massively skilled at that. So he was my favorite of all three that we did. And we also learned, if you recall, that when the interrogator, which is the role you played, when the interrogator appeared not to see the puppet or hear the puppet, that was the best and the funniest of all, because at that point then the audience was in on the joke, but the interrogator was not. And the audience always loves knowing something that one of the people in the scene does not know. So we got to know the whole scene, whereas the interrogator only knew what the other person was saying. And that's why it was so delightful. I've been researching that, and we're going to be doing some more of that.
Great. Because
in my upcoming show, Forbidden Kiss, which is on June 12th at the California in downtown Santa Rosa, we are going to have Daniel there to do some more of that in sketches called Repeat Offender.
Ooh, cool.
Should be great fun.
Is this part of a stand-up routine?
These are sketches that I call stage left sketches, and they happen because when in this show, which has burlesque and comedy and improv and song and dance and magic, the audience throws a lot of money on the stage as tips during the show.
Wow.
And I have two women who we call our money bunnies that are very cute and all dressed up adorable, who come out in between acts and pick up all the thrown money. So these stage left scenes go on while they're picking up that money. So to give the audience something to watch while they're picking up the money and taking away the props from the previous scene and setting up the props for the next scene. So we're going to be having those stage left scenes. So the audience at the Forbidden Kiss will be able to see what we're doing in our improv class.
If you are interested in that, is stageleftstudio.com the place to find?
.net. Yes.
Yes.
Back earlier on in my business, I did not realize that I had not paid my domain name fee, and someone came along and bought stageleftstudio.com out from under me and offered to sell it back to me for $6,000. I said, no, thank you. I'll go for net.
Yeah, so that sounds interesting. And what was the date on that? So
June 12th. That's
7:30. Coming soon. Yeah.
Very soon. And yeah. I'm really excited. We've got an excellent show planned. The theme is California Pride. So put on your pride regalia and come join us.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So we've been talking about presence. Now, the third part of our theme today is connection. Connection, like I made a connection with that sock puppet because that was just very unusual and it really pulled me in. But most of the exercises I do, there's something there that I learn that I can use in everyday life.
Yep.
Would you like to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Connection is really, I think, in all my long years of being on the planet and thinking about what's it all about, is really what we're here for. Connection is about relationship. And we are in relationship, even if it's briefly with the person in front of you at the line at the grocery, or long-term with a wife or a husband or a family member, or in between with a friend. But connection is what it's all about. And I think in the long run, when I lay on my deathbed, it's going to be my connection to other people that will have given my life meaning. There are all these things that we accomplish, which are great. And ideally, you do good in the world. But I think the good in the world that we do is based on connection.
Well, and that really rings back to the notion of authenticity. You know, we need to offer ourselves authentically to every relationship and listen for what the other person is trying to communicate with us.
Absolutely. And if you're doing it, you know, I got raised in the church. Now I'm absolutely anti-religious now. I only went to church because my mother made me.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. But there was a thing, there are lots of pieces of wisdom in the Bible. And one of them was that Jesus said, do not pray in public like the publicans do, but go to a closet and be private. So to me, what that says is don't do anything so that you would be admired for doing it. Do it intrinsically for yourself, because this is for you. This is for your soul, for your spirit, for your psyche. It's for you. So the notion that people are selfish if they're doing something for themselves is absolutely a misunderstanding. You've got to honor and love yourself before you can honor and love anybody else. So connection is not only based on attempting to connect with other people, but it's primary that you connect with yourself. So if all your actions and beliefs are other-based, you've left yourself abandoned.
The relationship with yourself, I've not explored deeply, but when I have, it was about something called self-talk. What do I, like the sock puppet, tell myself when I'm saying something else because I believe the circumstances demand I be, you know, professional or be agreeable. But in my head, I say other things. But I also tell myself things about, I can't do this. I can't sing. I can't act like a woman. I probably could if I didn't tell myself those things.
Of course. I bet you there's not a woman you know that if you said act like a man couldn't give you a pretty good characterization of a man.
Well, it would be hyperbolic, I'm sure. It would be a very patriarchal response.
Well, not necessarily. All of us women have different experiences of men. But what I'm pointing out, though, is that you can have an understanding of something that you have paid attention to. And our culture pays attention to men. So most of us have an idea what it is to be a man. You just asked me to play that as a man. Yeah. And I was able to give manly vibe to what I was doing because I've had to pay attention to thousands, hundreds of thousands of men in my life. So what you pay attention to is what you know how to reproduce. There's plenty of people in the world who view women as helpers, mothers, people who do things for you, people who make sure everything runs smoothly, but that's a function.
I grew up with a generation where the roles were very clear, housewife, man of the house. Those roles were never questioned. They'd been handed down through the culture, and my parents handed them down, and I viewed that during my lifetime is when I experienced the change.
Yes.
Changes. Yeah.
Because the only way to deal with the role your mother was given was Valium.
Yeah. Well, my firstborn was a woman, a baby girl. And I wanted her to have all of the opportunities in this world that men had. So I became a women's advocate. Because I didn't want my daughter to suffer what I saw as that limited view of women.
And bless you for that. We need more men like you. Men who will stand up and go, that joke is not funny.
We have a call right now. Hang on one second here. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Bernie. I'm a first-time caller, but I'm a big fan.
Oh, cool. What's your name?
Marsha.
Marsha?
Yeah.
Are we doing improv here, Marsha?
Is that the topic of the show?
Yes, it is. So it's perfectly acceptable if you want to do improv with us.
Wonderful. Well, I would like to ask your guest, Cheryl,
yes.
She could possibly help me with my husband. You see, he's so boring and predictable. And it would be wonderful if she could give me some ideas to brighten up our relationship. And, well, the problem is, every day he does the exact same thing. Well, here he is.
Marsha, who are you talking to?
I'm calling.
Give me that phone. Who are you? Hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
Well, this is Cheryl King. Who is this?
Cheryl, yeah. Marsha's been talking about you, about that improv class that you got.
That's right.
She says I'm supposed to go to see you because I'm too darn, I almost said a swear word there, but I'm not going to do it because we're on the air, but I'm too darn predictable. She says I get up every morning in the same way. I swing my feet over the bed. I put my slippers on. I get my bathrobe on. I go do my business, you know. And then I go down. I have breakfast, steak and eggs every morning. And
is your name?
I just go sit on the porch. I've been retired for a little while. And she says if I went to this improv, that might loosen things up.
Well, chances are it would. But let me point out that those things that you do every morning, those are things that can give you comfort and help settle you into your day. So they aren't actually not a bad thing. It's just...
See, Marsha? I'm not doing nothing bad. I'd like to hear some more.
Marcia is right about one thing. If you never, ever vary your routine, that is predictable and boring. So have your moments in the morning where you do the same thing and it feels good and it enters you into your day in a pleasant way, but then find something to read that's different from what you normally read, or take a walk in a place you don't normally walk, or go to see a movie that you might not normally go to see, because when you allow yourself to bump into something that's outside of your routine, it brings up parts of your character and your personality that you don't normally access, and it makes you more interesting, and it also makes you more engaged with the world.
Well, all that sounds good in theory, but, you know, my parents, my granddaddy and his granddaddy all did things the same way. And I don't know, if I come up with something new, I might change or something like that, and that's kind of scary.
You know, you might change, and change is kind of scary, but also think about this. If you don't change, you just get into a rut, and the rut gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and pretty soon you can't see out of it anymore. And you do recall that most of our parents died young of heart disease.
Well, that is true. My granddaddy died at 37.
Well, that's incredibly young. What was that, some kind of a farm accident?
He got combined, might say, with the dirt.
Those combines, well, you know, or there's, oh, yes, Bernie wants to say something.
I just wanted to say, John Deere.
John Deere.
He's making a pun.
Is that like a Deer John letter?
He's making a pun on the airwaves. Oh, Bernie.
Well, anyway, she says I should take one of these improv classes, and it might help me.
The first one is free, you know.
What do you think?
Yes, I think it would. And the first one is free, so you can come get a taste.
Ah, now you're talking my language. I've been retired 20 years now, and money is kind of tight.
That's right. So, you know, if you want to try something new, come on down to my improv class in Santa Rosa on Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. You can get your first class free, and then you can find out if it suits you. Some people it doesn't. A lot of people it does. The people in my current class are brilliant and funny and exciting, and I love working with them.
Oh, Marcia wants to ask you something.
Hello, Cheryl.
Hey, Marcia.
Do you happen to have a website or something we can contact you with?
I do, Marcia, and thank you so much for asking. It's StageLeftStudio.net. And when you get to that website, click on the button that says classes, and you can look about my improv classes or my stand-up classes. And I would certainly love to see you in class too, Marcia.
Well, just one more question. You think this might help spice things up in the bedroom?
Oh, well, certainly. Now, we don't do those kind of exercises in my improv class, but this kind of freedom and playfulness that we emphasize in improv, you can take right to the bedroom.
Well, hot diggity. Yeah, let's do that. All right.
Thank you,
thank you, Cheryl, and thank you, Bernie.
Thank you for calling.
All righty.
Thank you, Rebecca and Jeff. You were great. You had me going for a while. Well, I was hoping you would call, and I love the way you did it.
It was funny looking at the look on Bernie's face.
We're big fans.
You could tell he thought,
both
uh-oh.
Of you. Yes, both. All right. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Thanks,
Bye.
You guys.
See you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was fun. Let's take a quick break here. Some more underwriters to hear from.
Underwriting support. Established in 1959, they are a family-owned grocer located on Old Redwood Highway in the Larkfield Center. Their website is molesburymarket.com. Molesbury Market tunes into the Roots of Rock every Sunday morning at 7 on Cowes Community Radio.
Cowes thanks Many Rivers Books and Tea. Many Rivers specializes in tools for spiritual practice, tea, and teaware. They're located at 130 South Main Street, Suite 101 in Sebastopol.
and can be found online at manyriversbooks.com. They can also be reached by phone at 707-829-8871.
Hey, Cheryl, are you willing to read us another community event?
Sure.
How about you do this in the form of a ad man, ad woman?
Oh, got it. Are you looking for a new experience, a way to share your love of music? KOWS Radio is excited to announce our new Host with the Herd program. That's right. A $100 donation makes you eligible to join an experienced radio host live on air as a guest host. You'll have an hour to share music, and if you'd like, let our listeners know why the selections you made are meaningful to you. After the show, you'll receive a KOWS t-shirt, a recording of your show, a photo of you in the studio, and a certificate for your brag wall. Experience the excitement of broadcasting live over the airwaves. Email us today at cows@sonic.net to get started.
Fantastic. Now, just one more, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How about you're a librarian?
The Sonoma County Historical Society promotes Sonoma County's diverse heritage through education, preservation, and community engagement. Since 1962, the Society has been collecting, preserving, and retelling Sonoma County's stories. From the quirky, clever, and downright scandalous personalities who shaped our county, to the places and events that bore witness to spectacular milestones in our past, they celebrate our county's heritage while enriching its future. To become a member, or find out more about events and programs that the organization promotes, visit SonomaCountyHistory.org.
Thank you, Cheryl. That's the best we've done announcements on this show in a long time.
I think we need to hire this girl. Do you work for Peanuts?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Did you ever meet Charles Schulz?
No, I didn't.
No?
No.
Or, yes.
No.
No.
No, I did not.
doesn't work on radio. You know, you guys are fantastic. Without you, this radio station would be not as rich and enlightening. Thank you very much for
thank
all
you.
That you do.
I appreciate that.
Community.
Well, thank you so much.
God bless you.
Thanks.
All right.
So, Cheryl, one of the points we got to with the value improv is to help us in everyday life. Do you have some stories about how sort of being loosened up, if you will, or being more impromptu in how you interact with people helps in life?
Oof, I have got hundreds of those. The first thought that comes to mind is my work as a director. When I first started directing people, directing is a different process than teaching. It requires that you have a sensitivity to what the person you're directing is doing and what they need and want. And the only way to understand and absorb that is to move into a state of listening and to let them take their time. I think too often in our society, we don't let other people take their time. We don't give them room. We don't give them, that's really distracting. Barney, you're doing those papers. You're not listening to me right now. This is an example, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was trying to do my homework.
Yeah, during your interview. So this is a good example. You and I just gave your listening audience a good example. When you are with somebody, you need to be with them, and other things like that you put off till later, right? Or you do them before you're with them. And this is how improv applies to real daily life. Was I could have just sat here and been uncomfortable while I watched you initialing those papers, but instead I thought, no, honor my feelings as a person and say how I feel about it out loud, because then that means that I trust you to actually be with me. And I trust you to actually care that my experience matters and that you also trust me, because we are here together in this and our goal is to provide your listeners with something valuable and important. So we just gave them a little real life example of the ways that we check out. You can check out for 30 seconds in the middle of a conversation and the person you're talking to or the person you're supposed to be listening to feels that, or they see it. And what they feel is, what I'm saying doesn't matter. What I have to offer here is not valued. And even though that was not what you meant just now, you were just trying to get this done. And even though I'm not offended, it did interfere with our communication. So the idea of being fully present with somebody means not doing something else at the same time. And our culture does not pay much attention to that, you know?
It's an excellent point. I accept it. And it reminds me of an exercise we did in your class where we had one of the people play someone who had an annoying phrase they would just use all the time. And
right.
The other person had to try to get them to stop that or get away from it or something.
Or just endure their discomfort.
I think what you're trying to say is...
That was one of the phrases.
Yeah, that was me and you. And it was fun being annoying, but it wasn't fun just before being called out on being annoying without having even realized that I was annoying.
Well, see, that's the thing is, in our culture, we have punished people so much for so many tiny things, and we have failed to be honest when we could have been honest, that people don't get to hear about it the minute it becomes annoying. They hear about it 2 or 3 days later when there's a big head of resentment that got built up. If we would be honest with each other on a regular, steady basis and trust each other, then we wouldn't build up a head of resentment. We could say, could you not do that right now? And the other person would go, oh, sorry. And then it's over, right? It's no big deal. You and I don't have anything left over from the fact that you wanted to sign that thing just then. It's over because I mentioned it. So there's no buildup, right? We're just with each other. We're still. So when you find yourself going off the path that you want to be on, which in your case is being present, then you just make an adjustment and get back on it. Right? It's not a big deal, and nobody has to get punished or screwed up or made to feel terrible. Just make an adjustment.
Well, I did make a choice to be perceived as being a responsible DJ here doing what I'm supposed to do rather than being with you in the show and the conversation that we're having.
Exactly. And that little task you wanted to do is a 30-second task. I'm sure you can do it quietly while the next DJ is getting settled.
Yeah. We're getting to the end of the show.
I know. It's been really... Oh, can I tell you...
This has been one of the strongest points I think we've made in this whole show.
Well,
right here,
and it just happened organically. Before we go, I want to tell the public, though, that I have a new writer's variety show, which is happening at the Astro Motel on June 18th from 6 to 9 p.m. It will be poets. It's for flash fiction. It's for stand-up. It's for spoken word. And it's for monologues. And people can go to my website and find out how to submit and how to buy tickets for that event. It's curated. Each person gets 5 minutes. And I'd like to urge your listeners who write, to come to the show. And if they'd like to participate, to visit my website and submit their material.
StageLeftStudio.net.
Correct.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for doing the show today.
My pleasure, buddy.
It's been wonderful, and I hope the listening audience has gotten something out of it. So I thank you, listeners, and I thank the callers and for jumping right into the improv mode.
Were.
Yes, it was really good fun. So with that, I'll just remind you that Ecologic will be on again in 2 weeks, and hope you'll tune in. Bye.
Bye.